originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat He's Had Enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219 XM 201, and also to those of you tuning into our website at horseracingradio.net. So a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you are able to help, please visit the website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight, multiple stakes winning jockey, she was the leading apprentice at Penn National in 2005 and continued to find success in the Mid-Atlantic region, ranking among the top jockeys in the nation in 2007 with 155 wins in a single year. She's now giving others a leg up into the racetrack industry by instructing at Mooresville State College Equine Management Program. With 643 wins and over $8 million in earnings, it's a pleasure to introduce jockey Katie Lee. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Katie, I am really excited. I have not talked to you since I rode with you at Penn National.
Yeah. Back. Yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been quite some time, Katie. And you had quite the successful year, career, as we just heard. And tell us a little bit. Let's start off by telling us what you are doing now at Mooresville State College.
Well, I just started here in January. We're revamping our equine racing program here at Mooresville. So there's another faculty member here, and I'm an instructor as well here at the college. And we have students that are looking to go into all sorts of portions of the industry in racing. We have both thoroughbred and standardbred racing. So we're working here with the students with the thoroughbreds. We have a few that are looking, one girl wants to be a jockey, others are hoping to, you know, move into maybe a training position or many other areas. So we're working with them on their riding skills, their stable management skills, working with them to make sure that they have a good leg up when they enter the industry. They also take lots of different classes like nutrition, health and lameness, breeding, all these things, so when they go out into the industry, they can really have a good leg up on being successful.
Sounds like an excellent program, Katie, and I'm sure the students love having you as an instructor, given that you know firsthand what it's like to be a jockey. And there are not enough, very few programs here in the States that actually provide an avenue for someone who is not from a racing background actually get involved in the sport. So I love to hear what you are doing, and take us through the day-to-day work that you do with these kids.
Yes, you're right. I agree. There's definitely not a lot of different avenues for people that aren't part of the racetrack to enter the racing world. I think it's wonderful that we can not only give them the education, but also some connections so that they can find some successful jobs when they move out of here. So on a daily basis, our students come in and feed about 6:30 in the morning, and we do stalls and get the horses ready for the day. We have different classes throughout the day. We have our freshmen early in the morning, so about 8 o'clock. We work with them. At the beginning of the year, some of them have never been around horses, so teaching them how to do stalls and tack up horses and prepare them, you know, for training for the day. We go out and we have an indoor arena. Unfortunately, the weather here this time of year is not all that nice. So we have a lovely indoor arena. It's 140 by 300, so nice big area for us. So once we get their riding skills where they're feeling comfortable, we can actually do a slow gallop in the arena with them and work in company and teach them how to pony. And right now we have some babies, some client horses and babies that we're breaking. So that they can learn, you know, from the ground up to get these horses prepared to go to the racetrack. So they're finding that pretty exciting right now, too.
Other than the babies you mentioned, where do you get your horses from that the students actually learn on?
The majority of our horses are donations. So we've had some horses that have come in as young horses that we have started and that we still have. But we do have several horses that had raced. Three of them are retired from racing now, but they're still great teaching horses for these students. You know, they still teach them how to sit and gallop, and they still want to take a little hold of them. So it's kind of a nice way for them to learn. We have a couple horses. One came from Linda Rice. He was a pretty nice horse, made a couple hundred thousand when he was out there. So he also ponies, so he's a pretty good boy.
How long is the program?
They can do an associate's degree for 2 years, or they can do a four-year bachelor's program.
I love it, and love that you're involved with that, Katie. If someone listening were interested in getting involved with the program, applying to the college, how would they go about doing that?
They can look us up on our website, or they can email us here. I can give you that information if they'd like to, but they can come out and visit us. We're always loving to show off our facility, so if anybody ever wants to come out and take a look, we have a huge rehab center here, too, that we use as well with our program. It's another avenue that the students can take, so they're always welcome to come out and take a look at the college if they're interested.
I love it, Katie. I love it. And let's talk a minute now. When you retired from riding, how did you come to that decision? And then how did you get this job you're at now?
I guess it was a tough decision to stop riding. I absolutely loved racing. And as you know, winning never gets old. It's always a lot of fun every day that you go out there. But I was looking to kind of, you know, a little more peace and quiet in life. I was about to get married. So I left, I guess my last race was probably in February 2012, and then I got married that year as well. We moved up to northern Pennsylvania with our horses, and I opened a tack shop up there for a few years. And then I found out about this position. A lady had come in and told me that she'd seen this opening, and we were talking about it a little bit. And I thought, oh, it's kind of disappointing that it's 4 hours away from where I am now. And then I thought a little bit more about it, and I graduated from here in 2002, and I know that I got a lot out of the program and really loved being here. And I thought that, you know, it'd be a great way to get back into the horses and help others have, you know, great time out in the racing industry. So I came up here and applied, and I'm just thrilled to be here. We're having a great time here with these students.
I love it, Katie, and I was going to mention that. I've introduced you as Katie Lee, but technically now you're Katie Lloyd. So tell us about your husband.
That's right. Yeah, my husband, Todd, we met at the racetrack. He grew up racing. His family had been involved in racing from, I guess, as long as he could remember. They grew up in Wisconsin and then moved out to Pennsylvania. His parents trained. His one brother was a jockey, and his other brother trained, and so they were all really involved in the racing world. He's one of those who's fantastic on a horse, makes it look too easy sometimes. But yeah, we got married in 2012, and now we're making our move up here to northern New York here, or western New York, I suppose. So yeah.
Well, you yourself, Katie, you mentioned his background. You yourself actually were born in England, of all places. And let's take it back to the beginning of how Katie Lee got her start. And you're born in England. You traveled a lot in Europe with your family. Now, was your parent, any of your parents, were they involved in the military or?
No, my father worked for a company that has different companies all throughout Europe. So, like you said, I was born in England. My whole family was from England. And all my cousins and everybody, they still live out there. We left England when I was 3 and moved over to Belgium. Lived there for 2 years. I don't remember a whole lot about it because I was pretty small, but when we were 5, we moved out to Spain and lived there for 3 years. And my father stayed within the same companies, just different positions in the company, so they moved him around a little bit. And then we moved to the U.S. in 1988 when I was 8, so we've been here since then. It was really fantastic getting to move around a little bit. I think it's nice getting to see the world a little bit. There's so many different things out there for everybody, and I think that was kind of a nice thing for us to get to see a little bit and travel around a little.
Yeah, all of those places you've mentioned, I think anyone else would dream living in Spain or Belgium or somewhere like that. And but eventually you all settled in the eastern part of the States, Connecticut. And
that's correct.
You actually have a twin sister.
I do, yeah. She's my best friend in the whole world.
I love it. And does she work with horses as well?
No, she's an occupational therapist. I always laugh and say she's the smart one, but yeah, we're best friends. but she has a horse as well. She rides. So actually, we both started riding together when we were, I suppose we were 12 when we first started taking riding lessons. So she's always loved horses as well.
Any other siblings?
I do have an older brother as well. He's 3 years older than me. Actually, we lived close to him in Pennsylvania. He's up over that way as well. So, yeah, we're all very close.
And you said you started riding when you were about 12. And were you riding show horses early on? Or how did that evolution begin from your riding stages?
I suppose from ever since I can remember, I always wanted to ride horses. And my poor mother, she thought it was a phase, but we started taking riding lessons at a show barn in Connecticut, my sister and I, and did a lot of local schooling shows around there. And I guess growing up, I always wanted to be a show jumper. And then I went to college. I started college in Ohio. Never even thought about going to the racetrack. Like I said, I wanted to be a show jumper. And I met a lady out there who got me a job at the summer grooming horses at Finger Lakes for a guy there, and just absolutely fell in love with the racetrack. I learned so much grooming up there, and that was actually how I ended up making my transition to Morrisville when I was in college, was that they had this racing program. And once I started breaking babies and found my love of the racetrack, that's all I ever wanted to do. So I moved over here and finished up my schooling here. And like I said, we got to break a lot of babies, got to prepare horses for the racetrack, learned about different training methods and about the anatomy and physiology of a horse, and got to use all of that, you know, all of that knowledge once I came out to the racing world. And then moved up to Finger Lakes when I graduated, and that's where I started galloping.
I'm curious, Katie, as to what profession you had chosen prior to your introduction to the racetrack. What were you majoring in school in Ohio?
It was an equestrian program as well, but I was thinking that maybe I would get to maybe be in part of a show barn or show jumping, things like that. That's what I thought about before I came to the track.
So horses were obviously always your passion.
Yes. And then I guess it never goes away. I think I still wake up thinking about horses and go to bed thinking about horses. That's just the absolute love of my life.
In your blood, Katie.
Yes.
Can't get away from it, right?
No.
What initially fascinated you about the racetrack?
I guess there's just so much excitement about it. You know, every day is different and exciting, and the horses are just amazing athletes and just so fun to be around. You know, I've seen people that think that, you know, maybe the horses don't enjoy racing, but, you know, from experience, these animals just go out there and they absolutely love to run. And it's just an amazing feeling being out there galloping and breezing horses. And my first race, I still remember it. It was just the most exciting thing I'd ever done. And, you know, and it just never gets old.
You said you started out grooming horses, and obviously with your previous background with horses, you already knew a lot, but maybe what did you learn at the racetrack that was different?
I learned a little bit more about the gentleman I worked for had some babies, so I guess, you know, some injuries that you see that come up, maybe some buctions and things like that, learning how to work through that and, you know, caring for the horses in that way. We did a lot with that. And he actually ended up helping me learn to gallop a little bit at the track there with his pony. He'd take me out there on a couple of the horses and work with me. So when I came back the following summer, I was galloping a few for him. So,
is galloping much different than riding show jumpers?
I think yes and no. I mean, you can take all the basics that you know, show jumping. I mean, riding a horse is definitely riding a horse. But yeah, it is different as well. There's a lot of horse under you when you're out there on the racetrack versus some of the show jumpers. A little bit different kind of riding.
So when did the idea first pop in your mind, the idea to become a jockey?
When I was in college, I think once I first came to the racetrack, I thought that I'd like to gallop at a farm. I thought that would be really exciting working with the babies because I was working with babies and really enjoying that. But as I got galloping more and got to learn to breeze and be out there doing that, I just decided this would be really a fun way to make a living going out there racing. And yeah, it really was. It was a great time.
What did your parents think of your idea?
Probably the same as yours did. they were always very supportive. I guess I couldn't ask for any better parents. They're most wonderful people. But I'm sure I scared them a lot. it was not fun when I had to call them and tell them about when I broke my back. My poor mom wasn't very happy.
Sure she wasn't.
No, I could only imagine, though. It's got to be tough watching your loved one out there in the races. It's, you know, a lot of different things can happen, so it is scary for them.
Most definitely. My father says that I gave him gray hair, but I don't know about that. But for you, when you had the idea to ride races, were you at all worried about the weight requirements or the size? Were you naturally small anyway?
I guess I was very lucky. I'm just built very small. I'm only 5 feet tall, so I was always very thankful for that because I always got to eat and not have to worry about weight like a lot of the other guys did. I couldn't imagine how they had to live that way, but no, I was always very lucky. Very thankful for that. In fact, that's how I got my first winner. The horse got in with 105 pounds, so I was the only one who could do the weight, so that was how I got my first winner.
Do you remember your first win and the details of how it happened?
I do, yes. Royal Irish Lace at Finger Lakes Racetrack. Yeah, she was fantastic. I'd love to say that I did a good job, but really she kind of ran off with me most of the race and won for me. She was an old classy horse.
So basically a wire-to-wire victory?
It was, yeah. She was wonderful, though. It was very exciting.
Now, the feeling after you win a race you talked about earlier, when you cross the wire in front, Katie, it's your very first victory, what was going through your mind?
I guess I just couldn't believe it. I was so excited. I hadn't really been riding any good horses. You know, I was learning and wasn't riding anything that had a lot, but it was so exciting. I almost couldn't believe that that we hung on. It was a lot of fun.
Now, how quickly did that first winner come for you? You mentioned you rode some horses prior to that weren't really much account, but had you been riding for a long time and you've been waiting for that first
winner? Not a real long time, but I wasn't riding a lot all at once. It was maybe one or two a day throughout the week. I think it was probably my 10th mount. I can't really remember. Probably somewhere in there. I'd had a couple horses before then. My first horse that I rode was actually for a friend of mine. He put me on a horse for my first mount, so that was pretty exciting too.
How about the other jockeys at Finger Lakes at that time? Were they all pretty helpful and tried to show you the ropes?
I think most of them were, yes. Actually, there was one jockey in there. A friend of mine said to him, make sure you take care of her out there for me, in your first race. And I remember him coming up next to me in the race and said, if you're going to make a move, you better go now. Bumped into me a little bit and took off, and he ended up doing well. And I think I finished 9th or 10th or something. But, yeah, it was pretty fun.
Was it overwhelming for you there in the beginning, just getting everything together? I know myself personally, trying to put my silks on in my very first race, I'm trying to figure out the rubber bands that go around your arm. And I was
I guess those
lost.
Aren't the things you think about, right?
Yeah.
I guess when I got a leg up in the paddock, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm riding real short here, and the silk, your pants are a little slippery. It feels a little different in your saddle than you do out there galloping. I was thinking, well, I guess we're ready. So.
Ready or not, here we go, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it was a little overwhelming, getting dirt in your face like that for the first time is a little different. You're going pretty fast with a bunch of horses around you. But like I said, the jockeys out there took pretty good care of me, so I guess I was pretty lucky there.
How long did you stay at Finger Lakes?
I started there in 2004, and I stayed through the end of the meet there. They closed for the winter, and I hooked up with my jockey my agent that I had for a long time, a Penn. I'd called him and asked him if he'd take my book, and I came down and met with him and moved down to Penn National that winter, and I guess that we moved from there. My agent was fantastic. I guess not just an agent. He was a really great coach for me and really helped me learn and progress from where I was not riding a whole lot there at Finger Lakes to when I moved down to Penn and picked up a lot more mounts and started doing well there.
What was his name?
Marty Savaggio.
Didn't he ride before?
He did, yes. Actually, I think he rode for about 5 years. His other brother was also a jockey, and then his other brother, Mike, was a trainer. So, yeah, they were also a racing family.
Was that helpful for you, having an agent who had ridden previously?
I think so, because, like I said, he was a really great coach for me. We spent a lot of time watching replays and talking about things that had gone well in the race, things that could have gone differently. He helped me learn how to handicap a race and look through and see how it should set up, who's going to be the speed horse, how the other riders are going to be out there in the race, and really helped me to kind of dig deep into that so I'd come out of the gate knowing where everybody should be and, which riders tend to do different things in the race, so you kind of have an idea where they're going to be. I think it was very helpful for me that he had ridden, because he could really coach me through improving.
What was the biggest piece of advice he gave you?
That the rail's the shortest way home.
I love it. And going from Finger Lakes to Penn National, did you notice any differences in the way the track played?
It was definitely a little different. Finger Lakes is day racing and Penn National night racing. That was a little different to get used to. I guess the track didn't play too differently, but, the rail was usually pretty good at Penn, so that was always a good thing, because nothing more exciting than sneaking up the rail there and getting a win out of your horse. So,
when you first arrived to Penn National, did you find a lot of business quickly?
Yeah, my agent had a lot of good connections there. We rode a couple horses early. My first winner actually there was for Jonathan Shepherd, and I think that was a really helpful one. It was a nice horse that kind of helped me out looking good out there, and once we won on that one, business started picking up a little bit more. So that kind of helped me out.
Jonathan Shepherd, that's a big name to start off right off the bat with a win.
Yes, I think Jonathan Shepherd, I think he's a pretty great trainer. You know, not only is he wonderful with his horses, but he's also the kind of guy that will give somebody a shot to do well. You know, my agent called him and asked him if we could ride the horse, and he said, yeah, absolutely. And I never actually got to meet him in person, but I did ride a couple for him, and always wonderful horses when they came in.
How about the riders at Penn National? Was there any difference in the way the riders would basically ride a race compared to Finger Lakes?
Yeah, I think every track people ride a little bit differently. When I was first at Finger Lakes, I wasn't doing very well, and so everybody was kind of very helpful to me. Once I moved to Penn and started being a little bit more competitive, you know, it's people aren't always your best friend that way, I suppose. So I did have a few, we had some disagreements and maybe didn't think that I, you know, there was a particular jockey that didn't think that women should be riders. So I guess the best way to overcome that was to beat them at the wire. So
I love it. That can mess with your head a little bit, though, when you're around people who are so against women riding, another jockey especially, when you're there in the room with someone like that. Other than just trying to beat them at the wire, as you mentioned, how do you deal with that mentally?
I think it always made me try harder. I guess I never mind if somebody said they didn't like the way I rode, but I didn't like if somebody said that they wouldn't put me on a horse because I was a woman. I think that everybody has their strengths and weaknesses out there on the racetrack, and I think one of my strengths was that I tried to ride a smart race. I might not always be out there to out-muscle somebody, but I'd surely be able to think about what was going to come out in my race. So if somebody told me I couldn't, I guess that always made me push harder. But, you know, it can be a little tough as a woman out there. Some people don't think that they want to ride women.
Katie, I would always say that I don't care who you are, you're not going to out-muscle a 1,200-pound thoroughbred. So
you're absolutely right.
You might think you can, but you cannot. You can't do
you're
it.
You're absolutely right.
Katie, we have to go take a quick commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accept the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanent Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use their monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Pena of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcott. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too, and I thank you.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
My sister Sue on the outside. Livermore Valley, Miss Elsie trying to hang in there at the rail. And then it's Solorana and Suzanne coming five wide. 44 and 2, the half. They're into the stretch. My sister Sue on top coming to the eighth pole. And then it's Livermore Valley, Miss Elsie to the inside, followed by Solorana. And on the far outside, it's Suzanne, but it's My Sister Sue on top coming down to the wire. My Sister Sue wins the Blue Sparkler. Livermore Valley was second, then Solorana and Suzanne.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined this evening by jockey Katie Lee. Katie, we just heard the replay of your victory aboard My Sister Sue in the Blue Sparkler Stakes at Monmouth Park on July 8th, 2007. What does that replay, what does that make you feel listening to
that? Oh, that was such a wonderful horse to ride. I was really thankful. Flint Stites, the trainer, he put me on a lot of horses, really helped me out. But I guess one of the most exciting things about that race, my parents actually got to come to the race, and they didn't get to see a lot of my races, so it was really exciting for me to have them there and to be able to win such a great race with such a lovely horse with them. I did have to convince them that they were allowed to come into the win picture. They didn't get super close to the horse because they're not really horse people, but yeah, it was really exciting. It was an amazing horse.
Yeah, My Sister Sue, quite, as you said, quite the amazing horse. You dueled for the lead in that particular race. You won by a length. But that horse also won earlier in the year. You also won the Premonetta Stakes at Laurel Park, going 6 furlongs. And you had a slim lead and then just drew off to win by like 4. And you actually paid $16 that day at Laurel Park. I was doing my research looking this horse up. And what I think is interesting is that you picked up the mount because I guess the race before, the horse got disqualified. So they were looking for a new rider, I'm assuming, is how it happened.
She was a little bit tough to ride. She was a very fast horse, and she didn't like to rate. And she was very competitive. So when you'd go around horses, sometimes if she didn't break fast, if you had to go around horses, you had to be really careful. She'd like to kind of want to lean in on them. So I know that... I think the race in Maryland, I think they had an inquiry against me there because she does want to kind of lean in on those other horses. That's why I always made sure I'd hit her left-handed because otherwise she'd like to duck down to the rail. But, yeah, she was a pretty wonderful horse.
Do you find that she sounds like she was kind of a bully. She was
she
kind
was
of the boss.
A little bit, yeah. She just loved to run. I think sometimes she was a little too fast for her own good. She didn't always think where she was.
Well, we got a little ahead of ourselves here talking about My Sister Sue, who you rode in 2007. But prior to the break, we were still talking about your introduction to Penn National. When you first arrived there, you still had the bug. You did very well with the bug there at Penn National. As I mentioned, you were the leading apprentice at Penn National. And the great thing about riding in the Mid-Atlantic region, I rode the same circuit, was that especially with the bug, you can ride everywhere. There's all these different racetracks. You have Maryland and Pennsylvania, Delaware, Charlestown, just to name a few, really. You can go
right
all over the place. So did you take advantage of that, Katie, with your bug?
Yes. I guess more later in my career, I rode a lot more out of town. But we did go to a lot of those tracks, you know, Philadelphia, I guess, parks now, Delaware and Laurel, all around there. And I think that was really helpful. Like you said, at different tracks, everybody rides a little bit differently, and the track plays out a little differently. So I think it really makes you a stronger rider when you get to experience that a little bit. And especially riding in Maryland, I think that's a really good group of jockeys that I think I learned a lot from them.
Has to be exhausting. Really,
it sure was.
To drive everywhere, ride at night at Penn National, Get up early, work horses in the morning. What was a typical day in the life of Katie?
I guess, especially in 2007, I rode a lot of, I was trying to ride both Maryland and Penn and some of the other ones in between. So I'd get up about 4 o'clock in the morning, drive down to Maryland, so about 2 hours, work horses there at Laurel, in the morning, and then ride probably 3-4 races in the daytime there at Laurel, and then drive another 2 hours back to Penn to ride at Penn. And I think I was riding probably 7-8 races at Penn every night at that point. So it was really exciting. We won a lot of races and had a great time. But like you said, it's exhausting. Going up and down the road there is a little tough.
Jeez, that is crazy, Katie, going all day, every day. Now, would you ever have a day off?
Not very often, no.
How do you deal with just the exhaustion? Would you take a nap in the jocks room sometimes?
Sometimes my agent would drive me back and forth, which was helpful. That way I didn't have to do all the driving from both tracks. But I think that's probably why at the end of 2008 I took a little break, went down to Ocala for the winter there, and worked down at Woodside Ranch for Brian Rice, breaking babies down there. I think I just needed a little break mentally from going up and down the road like that. And I took a little break down there and really enjoyed that.
Was that just for the winter then?
Yeah, I went down there for the winter. And then when I came back, actually, I didn't come back racing. I came back as an assistant trainer for a guy from Canada for a little bit. That's why I didn't ride in 2009. I was working for him, but I missed racing too much. Watching our horses go out there and I wasn't getting to ride them was tough. And so I asked my old agent if he'd take my book back, and he thought about it a little bit, and he had a couple riders at the time, and he said he'd take me back. So in 2010 I came back racing and won my first one back, and it was just great to be back in the saddle again.
You won your first race back after that couple year layoff.
Yes, it was. Wow. Exciting.
I don't know how to pronounce this horse's name. Iyarwadi?
I think it was Iyarwadi. Yeah. For John Wames. Yep.
Didn't know if I pronounced the name right. That would be tough for the announcer to.
Right. There's some funny names out there.
What kind of horse did you find you fit best? Was it like a nervous filly or maybe a bullheaded colt? What would you say?
I suppose I probably did better on the nervous fillies. I think I did a decent job of getting them to relax. I wouldn't say I was really a speed rider. I'd prefer to kind of make a move at the end. So with those nervous fillies, a lot of times if you could get them to settle early and then ask them for their race at the end, you'd still have some horse left. I think a lot of them, if you push too fast, too soon, you really didn't have a horse left, not necessarily physically, but more mentally. So I think I did pretty well with a lot of those nervous fillies.
When you made your comeback, Katie, did you find that all of your business came back?
I think there was a lot of question on how I do when I came back, but when I won that first race, I think that was really a helpful way to come back, almost like I hadn't left.
And you rode for two more years? Four more years
I
after
did.
That?
Two more years, yep. I rode through 2012, yep, the beginning of 2012.
And during that time, was it just a relief to get back in the saddle?
It was. I was really glad I came back. I'd really missed it. Like I said before, winning never gets old. It's always fun out there every single time, every single horse.
Did you ever have any injuries?
I did. I think I was pretty lucky compared to a lot of people. I broke my back in 2010 after I'd come back. I think it was in December. I broke my back on a horse. I think he spooked at the lights there at the wire at Penn and tried to jump over the inside rail there, and I flew over the rail and broke my back. So I was off for about 3 months with that. I broke my ribs and things like that. But I think overall I was pretty lucky compared to a lot of people that I've seen have quite the few injuries. I think I came out pretty lucky.
Broke your back and you came back in 3 months? That's pretty incredible.
I think I was very lucky that Well, I guess I would have liked to come back earlier, put it that way. But unfortunately, I couldn't. But it's really tough sitting on the sidelines. You watch all your other horses out there winning, and it's very hard going from being very busy and working hard to not being able to do anything and sitting around. I find that more difficult than everything else. So it was tough sitting there, not being able to get out there. So I was very happy to come back.
That was definitely the most frustrating thing for me, Katie, was I've told this story several times on the show, but I remember sitting at a hospital bed delivered to my parents' house because I broke my neck, and I would just lay in this hospital bed like day and night, and I was so bored. And of course, to further torture myself, I'd turn on TVG and I'd watch, as you mentioned, horses I was riding, they were winning, and I wasn't aboard. And one day I just threw the remote as hard as I could at the TV. I was just so frustrated. And it's one of the hardest aspects of the sport of riding, for me anyway.
Yeah, that really was torturing yourself.
I know. I don't know why I did that. But for you, Katie, what was the hardest part of riding?
I'm not really sure how to answer that. I don't know. I guess sometimes you have to change people's minds. You know, maybe I remember a trainer called my agent and said, you know, I don't like to ride girls. They're not my typical riders. But every time I ship into Penn, she beats me, and I'm tired of getting beat. So I want her to ride my horse. So I guess I thought that was pretty neat. So sometimes, yeah, you have to overcome those stereotypes or things like that. So I guess that could be a little difficult.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit during the first half of the show. You talked about another jockey who didn't really like the idea of riding against a girl. But other than the person you just mentioned who did eventually ride you, did you run across that frequently of riding for, well, coming across trainers who would not ride you because you were a girl?
I think we did have a few trainers that way, yes. But I think sometimes it works in your favor as well, because there are some people that like girl riders. They think that they saddle a horse better or whatever it may be. But so I do think that sometimes it worked in my advantage that people would put me on because I was a girl versus not. So it works both ways.
Do you think that racing is evolving as far as that goes, that it's becoming a more friendly place for women?
I don't know. I think in all areas of the horse world, people are kind of tough to change their views. I think they almost have to experience it themselves to want to change. I guess you do see more women riders than you used to, but still far fewer than the male riders.
Do you believe that certain tracks were maybe more friendly towards women as a whole?
Not necessarily in my experience, but there was a good number of women riders there when we were riding. And they seemed to do really well there, so that was kind of a good place.
You cut out briefly, Katie. Where was that?
At Philadelphia, at Parks.
Parks. Was there any other women riders other than myself who would chip in frequently? Was there anyone else you rode with regularly at Penn National who was a girl?
Yes, Erica Miklas, she's still riding at Penn. She rode with me a lot there. A lot of people shipped up there, kind of from all over there, you know, Laurel and Delaware and from all around that way. But Erica was a main rider there at Penn with me, so.
Yeah, Erica Strunk Miklas. I remember Erica.
Yeah.
Is she still riding?
She's still riding. She is, yes.
Good for her. I know, Kayla Albright, I think, was riding at Penn for quite a while as well, but I don't know
she
where she's
was.
At.
I'd already left by then, so I didn't know her very well, but I rode a little bit for her family. The Albrights had horses there.
You talked about the horse that actually broke your back, Spooking from the Lights at Penn National. And did you see that happen very often? I know shipping in with horses, a trainer might, you know, give me a heads up, hey, look, he's never been under the lights. And you don't really think about it until you're in a situation where it might arise, but horses aren't used to running at night under all these bright lights. Did you see did you see that happen frequently where a horse would spook from that?
I never had anything drastic like that. I think it was more a little bit nervous in the post-parade about the way everything looked. I never really had any other horses that were spooking from it. But, yeah, you could definitely see a little difference in the horses. They were a little bit nervous if they hadn't been under the lights before. But he was the only one, like I said, that actually really spooked from it. And I think I just had enough time to go, oh, no, this one's going to hurt.
Yeah, right. Yikes. How would you describe, to someone who's never been, how would you describe Penn National?
As far as a day-to-day on the backside kind of thing? Or
yeah,
more
day-to-day,
the
or just if someone wanted to go to the races, what would they find?
Let's see. I mean, I think it's one of, it's a cheaper track, but I think there's a lot of really good horsemen there. I learned a lot from the riders and the trainers that are there. It's year-round racing, which can be tough on people, I think, sometimes. I think there's a really good, strong group of horsemen.
I know when I would ship up there, Katie, and riding the last race at night in January, it was extremely cold, and I'm talking about cold when you're riding a horse going 35 miles an hour like you've never felt cold before in your life. So how
Absolutely.
Would you, oof, my gosh, I the crazy things I did back in the day, you couldn't even feel, I couldn't feel my hands half the time when you're trying to switch sticks and everything. How would you deal with that?
It's tough. I mean, you just can't, even though I was lucky not to have to worry about my weight, you just can't put enough on to be warm. And if you do, you can't move. So you have to kind of layer, I guess, a little bit. But like you said, with your hands, I mean, sometimes you'd go to pull up after the race and you just couldn't feel your hands anymore. And that's rough. It's chilly. And it's tough on the horses, too, you know, with their breathing, you know, cold airs. It's a little different. It's definitely a little brutal out there in the wintertime.
Yeah, it's not pleasant.
No. We were always ready for the good weather to come back.
Oh, yes, most definitely. Did you learn any tricks to deal with that over the years?
No, I guess just a good face mask was always a good thing. But other than that, I never really found a good way to stay warm, no.
Just deal with it, right?
Yeah, I guess you just deal with it. I always thought I'd move somewhere warmer, but now I'm back up here in New York and definitely not warmer.
Jockey Katie Lee joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Katie, if there were a highlight reel of your career, what would be on it? We talked about My Sister Sue. Any other big races, big moments, nice horses that come to mind?
She was definitely the nicest horse that I rode as far as that. But I did have one day that I remember, I guess it was 2008, that was pretty exciting. I rode five races that night at Penn and won all five. So that was pretty exciting for me. I think I rode really hard in that last race because it was just so exciting that I'd won the other four, and I was really making a big, strong move with that horse at the end and won just by a nose. So it was pretty exciting to win all five that I rode that night.
That's huge, Katie. All five. You didn't lose a race.
No, it was a lot of fun that night. Yeah, very, very cool.
That's incredible. I wonder if that's some type of record. For sure, I would think it. Penn National, perhaps. I don't know. I'd have to look at the statistics. That's a huge number. And when I rode, I always felt like when you're winning multiple races in one day or one night like that, you kind of get in the zone where everything's just working right and everything's just flowing and you know all the right moves to make. Did you find that was happening for you that night?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. What's that saying they always say? When you think you can, you think you can't, you're right.
Yeah.
I think when you're winning like that and you're relaxed, you're not overthinking things, you're just going out there and riding the horse that you have, and you just kind of know that you got there, you know. When you're in a slump and not doing very well, it's tough to get out of sometimes because you keep thinking, oh, I just so need to win a race. And then you try too hard or overthink and put yourself in a bad position. But when you're winning and doing well, you're really in that zone and focused. And I think, like you said, that makes all the difference.
Most definitely. Katie, if you could go back in time, would you change anything?
I don't know that I would change anything. I probably wouldn't have left racing when I did, maybe. I guess I do miss it. But I'm really enjoying what I'm doing now, so I don't know that I would have changed anything.
Good answer. Does staying involved now with the program, does that kind of appease your hunger for it?
It sure does, yes. It's really, really nice to be back around with the horses. I'm back involved in the racing a little bit more now. So we're hoping to get some horses to race at Finger Lakes this summer. So it'll be exciting to take the students there to do that. But, yeah, it really is nice to be back with the horses.
You'll be going back to Finger Lakes where it all started. That will be
reminiscent
for you.
Kind of exciting.
Have you been to the races since you retired?
I went back, probably last year. I went down to Penn for a weekend and went to some races. It was nice to get to see everybody again. But it makes you miss it, going back and watching everybody out there riding.
Definitely does. I went to the Preakness last year, I guess it was, and going back to Pimlico, and I went in the girls' room, and I was like, oh, that used to be my locker, and it is. It's kind of sad, but, you know, it's kind of nice, too, to go back and reminisce and think about all the good memories.
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is tough. It's kind of like it gets in your blood. It's hard to get away from. You love every minute of it, and it's your whole life, so it's very difficult when you move away from it.
What was your favorite track?
I would say Laurel. I absolutely loved riding at Laurel.
And why was that?
I love the track surface. It's set up really well for horses coming off the pace. I liked the group of riders there. They were always very strong. It was a great atmosphere. I think, you know, a lot of racetracks now, you don't see a lot of people come to watch the races. Maybe they're just betting a little bit, but it's not always about the horse. You'd find a lot of people come to the races and really just be there because they loved watching the horses, and I always enjoyed that at Laurel.
What do you think other tracks can do to draw in the crowds? We are, unfortunately, you know, I think a lot in part because of the era of simulcast, where you can watch races on TV everywhere and bet from your phone and everything like that, but to actually draw in a crowd, what do you think tracks can do better?
I think you're right. It is very difficult because you can watch them at home. It used to be a very family kind of thing. And I know a lot of the tracks do some of the family days to bring in people. And I always thought that was a good way to kind of get the young people back involved in racing and back enjoying it, you know, as a family, and then as they grow up, that they'd still be interested in going to the races. I think it's got to be almost like a family instead of just the races. It's got to be kind of like an adventure, I suppose.
Katie, you're part of a program now that's teaching young people to ride, and you're actually using a lot of retired racehorses in your program. What do you think we can do to better the horse after their career? How do you think we can improve programs like that?
I think that a lot of tracks are really trying to find different avenues now for horses as they retire, which is really wonderful. I mean, we have some horses that, you know, they're not going to go back to their races, but they are fantastic for teaching these students what they're going to experience out on the racetrack. We're always interested in taking donations for horses in that way. But I also, I have three retired thoroughbreds at home, and I think they're a very versatile breed. So it's nice to see a lot of these programs now trying to find different places for these horses to go and succeed. You see a lot of them out in the eventing world. You know, they're such strong athletes that they seem to do really well in so many different avenues. It's nice to see a lot of these tracks pushing, finding homes for them now.
I love to hear that, Katie, that you have three retired racehorses.
I do. Yourself. Oh, I love them. They're my babies.
Do you ride for pleasure frequently?
Oh, all the time. Every time I can.
I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got three. Two of them, when I was working as an assistant trainer, two of them were horses that he had then. And one of them I got a couple years ago. I was looking for horse, and I called up my old agent and said, hey, listen, I'm looking for a nice horse. If you find something somebody's looking for a home for, let me know. And he said, I think my brother knows one. So he went and asked around and called me back and said, yeah, we got one for you. So they sent him up to me, and he's been wonderful.
I love that. Did you find ride off the track, were they difficult to deal with at all, or did they transition pretty smoothly?
I think the riding part was an easy transition for them. I think more of actually being a horse, you know, getting used to being turned out with other horses and how to act with other horses was more difficult for them than actually going out and riding because, you know, they've seen so much at the racetrack. People forget that, you know, they're racehorses, but we ride them every day. You know, they go out there and train. They see all sorts of things happening out at the racetrack. So they're very comfortable with different things. They just have to learn their new job. I never had a hard time with them in that way. It was more, like I said, getting used to being a horse and getting turned out and where the fences were and those kind of things.
Katie, unfortunately, we are all out of time. That hour flew by. Folks, remember, you can go see Katie. She's instructing at the Mooresville State College's Equine Management Program if you want to get involved in racing. She's the person to talk to. Katie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thanks for listening.